Wouldn't it be great if three idiots picked apart each episode of your favorite podcast?
We do that. Wouldn't it be great if we discussed the newest episode, ongoing theories, and predictions for what comes next?
We do that. Wouldn't it be great if they didn't ruin the podcast at all and kept everything spoiler-free?
We don't do that. You've been warned.
Welcome to We Do That, a Taz Fancast. I'm your co-host, Chris.
And I am an enchanter. There are those who call me Tim.
And I'm Colin.
This week's episode, Amnesty, Episode 8.
Alright guys, here's your synopsis for this week. Our heroes regroup at Amnesty Lodge and settle the Barclay debate we didn't even know was going on. Jake Coolice gets into some warm water, and our trio fights Supreme with buckets, towels, chairs, and a sword. It turns out that even Beacon isn't enough to slay this light, so the Pine Guard venture beyond the gate to Sylvain to seek the Enchanter of Absorbent Towels.
Just a quick warning, this is not a new enchanter named Tim, it's actually just me, Jake.
We'd finally moved on from that Jake guy. But cool. Glad you're back, Jake.
Yeah.
Definitely missed you.
Yeah. Hey, Jake.
It's been 2 weeks. I forget a whole lot of stuff. We've been off. Y'all, we've been off, and it's been a minute.
Yeah. That 2 week gap feels much longer after getting used to weekly for so long.
Yeah. It's like in that Seinfeld episode where Kramer paints over the middle line and suddenly you have these big, luxurious lanes. Like, I didn't even know what to do with all this space.
Boy, that's a reference I just didn't get.
I didn't get it either.
Yeah.
That's cool. So,
Well, to save Chris from his discomfort, I cast Zone of Truth.
All right.
I was wrong.
Yeah. Just can't get it.
Yeah. Mama didn't come back. And at least as far as we know, the monster can't control people. And maybe if there were other elementals and they couldn't, although, like, swallowing fire would probably be less comfortable.
I've seen folk do it.
Do you think fire could have controlled Lady Flame?
Interesting.
Yeah, that's an idea.
Not a good one.
But either way, I was wrong this week.
I was also wrong. I really thought that they were going to go to, like, the town council and tell them that all their water was infected with elemental spirits. They didn't. They chose to keep it under wraps, and in doing so, imperiled Jake Coolice.
Yeah, I mean, I was so set on being vague last week, 2 weeks ago. I was like, I'm just gonna cast a wide net, and I still didn't get it all. I just want to hit 100 at one point.
Well, you did significantly better than Colin and I. So let's recap your predictions, Chris.
Well, I said they would go back to the lodge.
Got it.
Check. I said they would talk to Barclay.
Got it.
Check. Then I thought they'd go to the Cryptonomica. Not check.
Yeah.
Well, 66. A solid C.
0.66 repeating.
Yeah.
Is a 66 a C? It.
Yeah.
No.
I've never had a grading scale where 66 was a C.
It's Sorry, almost an F.
Yeah. I skipped 10 numbers in my counting. I went, yep. I forgot about 70. The entire. Oh, man. Y'all, it's been a week.
Didn't use the 70s a lot.
Makes me feel all bad on so many.
Best couple just, weeks.
Just forgot about 10 whole numbers just in the whole. Jesus. Let's do this thing. Please save me from myself.
All right. Well, let's start at the beginning.
It's a very good place to start.
All right. Where Aubrey doesn't know Barclay's name.
Yeah, that was tough.
In their defense, I think Barclay versus Barclay is an easier mistake to make in 2 weeks than forgetting, you know, 70.
That's fine. However, Griffin has only ever delivered it one way. Like, Griffin knows the character is Barclay. There's no reason they would have heard it another way, nor do I think they'd ever, like, see it written and do it their own way for themselves.
I'm almost positive that I've called him Barclay on this show, so I don't feel like I have a lot of room to talk. Because...
Well, we're known for our 100% facts here.
Oh, yeah.
Obviously. Yeah.
Certified.
So, I mean, I give Aubrey a lot of slack, and honestly, I thought, jumping, now that I've taken this to the beginning, allow me to jump ahead. In general, I really liked how Travis played Aubrey this episode. I thought it was a lot more, like,
I mean, I'll go one step farther and say, I just really liked this episode.
This was a good episode,
for like, sure. And I think Aubrey was a big part of that, like, really solidly landing in that character. I feel like Trav hasn't quite nailed her up till now. Like, she's seemed older, she's seemed younger, and this pocket really seemed to work for the character.
Yeah, she always, before this, I think she always seemed a little too serious, a little too self-serious. But this one, there was a bunch of goofs, and I think it really worked to her character.
Yeah, man, just the endless questioning is perfect. You know, and again, like, we've sort of had these moments emerge where it feels like the Adventure Zone. And this episode really felt like the Adventure Zone to me. And it's because the boys got to do a little bit of fighting and a little bit of dicking around and a little bit of story progression. And it all worked together. And it was funny. So, A+.
I will say her endless questioning did lead me to consider something Chris brought up, I think, in 2 episodes ago, episode 6 maybe, where they were talking to Swim Kid. And the
2 episodes ago exists?
Yeah, yeah. Continuity. But the question of why wouldn't you just ask endless questions of whomever you're talking to? Like, they had a roll to see how many questions they could ask. But does that
it's a game?
Yeah, but it seems like
I think you have to read between the lines of the rules a little bit, where it says you can ask, you can hold this many to ask these questions, and you will get answers to them that are truthful. There's probably a line there where, like, if you decide the conversation you're going to have with an NPC is I'm going to just keep asking them questions, the keeper has to let that play out, and it's up to, I imagine, the keeper then to try to get the NPC out of the conversation. Like, it's still a valid tactic for a player character.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah, I think it is. Okay. I just think it's an interesting part of the game where, like, oh, I'm not gonna be able to ask Swim Kid everything I want.
Yeah, I mean, it's a tricky thing that they're attempting to commoditize information, because that is the critical currency of the game, you know, as opposed to finding a relic or something. You need to find facts. And when it's something intangible, you have to do something, you know, something has to give in order to make it work. I do think it is the formal questioning structure of the game, I do think, is just sort of strange, and maybe just will take some getting used to, especially that given the way the McElroys play the game, it's sort of, that seems like a line you really have to follow very closely, otherwise things start to fall apart. You know, Griffin has to really hold on to facts unless they earn them, and the players have to really set themselves up to purposely gain information, as opposed to trying to stumble into a critical fact that will lead them to the monster.
Yeah, and I do think it's a tough needle to thread. You know, how to build that exactly. And I think a lot of the mechanics of the game make more sense if they were talking to or questioning an adversary, as opposed to somebody who has no reason not to be open and honest with them.
Yeah.
So what did you guys think of the fight in the hot springs?
Well, I mean, we've had 3 episodes, and Griffin has dunked on my boy in 2 of them. So, I'm not digging this. Also, we have confirmation that he's a sylph.
And so not a werewolf.
Do we know that?
Yeah,
I thought he's a vampire.
Oh, I thought he was just from Sylvain, but we don't know what
he is. I don't think we know what he is.
Oh, I thought...
Unless the sylphs are the vampires, and that's what they're...
Oh, okay.
I don't know.
Sylvain.
Yeah.
I don't know if we're assuming that he is a vampire.
Which...
But I think...
I'm just going to say this, while... I'm glad for Jake's sake he's not a werewolf.
But we don't know that.
The fact that he is not definitively a Yeti is a missed opportunity.
But we don't know that. He exists in this sort of Schrodinger's cool ice box where he is both a Yeti and a werewolf until it is confirmed that he is one or the other.
People are so much less familiar with Schrodinger's cool icebox.
Schrodinger's icebox is definitely this episode title, by the way.
It's got lots of
is it ice or is
metaphysical
it water?
Ice cream sandwiches, theoretical. That well is dry.
Come on.
You write for a living. You got to have those words.
What else do you store in the freezer?
I mean, it's true. How do I know if I'm out of popsicles if I never open the freezer? Like, I know I bought popsicles a couple months ago. I don't remember if I finished them. If I never open the freezer, do I then have infinite popsicles?
Yes.
I mean...
Not infinite popsicles.
No,
infinite
like...
Popsicle.
But you cannot know the amount of popsicles as you have.
Popsicles is...
But wouldn't you hate to have an infinite popsicle? Would it be like an everlasting gobstopper, one that lasts forever, or would it just be a infinitely long popsicle?
No, well, if it was infinitely long, that would be terrible.
What if you bit a chunk out of the middle, and then with the combined mass of this infinitely long popsicle, you just made like a railgun, and it drove into the earth, and that's how physics works, I think.
How would that happen?
I don't know,
like
there,
a frozen
because there,
confection
there
black
is
hole.
An infinite amount of mass that would suddenly fall because
yeah,
you bit the middle of the popsicle
if,
out.
But
acceleration wouldn't exist because it wouldn't be moving. Like you need to be accelerating the mass that is not currently in contact with the ground, and if the whole thing's contiguous, even if you take a bite out of it, it's not going to move enough.
Well,
to get up.
So
force.
I mean, so you take a bite out of it, and then you move a step to the right.
Yeah, but gravity.
So the stick is in your hand, and if we're assuming, you know, that's about mouth level, let's call that
4'8".
You're not that short.
Some people are.
Okay, we're assuming 4'8". Then the infinite popsicle falls 4'8", and with all of the mass above it,
it drives
into the ground.
It still wouldn't work because if it's an infinitely long popsicle, then it must be running, it can't be running perpendicular to the ground. It has to be running parallel to the ground as at some tangent. Because otherwise it would be going through the earth already. And so if you were to take a bite out of the middle, nothing would happen.
Hold on.
I imagine it's like
Why do we make the earth a popsicle kebab?
I'm just saying that an infinite
It's a ray. It goes from the stick and then extends infinitely away from me.
Right.
No interaction with Earth. Like it's just going to go into space.
Well, and then warp around space time and come right up the bottom of the Earth to rejoin itself.
So you're saying space is?
I don't know enough about stars. But I don't think that's right.
I know a lot about
Neil
stars.
deGrasse Tyson will come on our podcast and help us with this. Bad or like really, really bad?
I mean,
probably
I
just bad.
I also don't think the gravity of the Earth could force an infinitely long popsicle down to the ground.
Well, it depends on how many other bodies of mass it was near in its journey out to forever. Because every piece of those gravitational forces would be...
But if it's infinitely long, it has more mass than any of them.
But not at a proper density. Like, a popsicle is not very dense. There's frozen water.
Well, it depends on what kind of popsicle we're talking about.
No. Popsicles are always frozen.
Well, yeah, but they're not. It depends on the ratio of water to other ingredients.
Well, if you stray too far from water, then you don't have a popsicle anymore. You have a fudgesicle.
Well, assuming you replace the water with fudge.
Well, that's a very different calculation. We all know that
fudge is heavy enough to break the earth. Like, that was not the question.
Super fudge would do it.
And this has been Popsicle Boys.
Is this what happens when there's, like, a good episode and we don't want to complain about
Griffin
and systems and poor roleplay for a while? Like,
you guys waited a whole extra week.
This is what we've been prepping. A really shitty physics lesson.
Hey, somebody tweet this at Neil deGrasse Tyson and see if you can get him to partake in our discussion regarding...
Cool. That was funny when I said it, too.
It wasn't a call to action.
Colin's delivery was better.
Yeah, that's true.
Mine was a call to action, Chris.
Hey, here's a question. Where the fuck is Dr. Harris Bonkers?
Hey, don't... Look, if we say his name three times, he may show back up. Sleeping bunnies lie.
It's Schrodinger's Dr. Harris Bonkers, right?
No, you can't do that again. We've used it once, that's it. We have a quota for the podcast. We can move on to some other theoretical construct.
Do you think it's possible Barclay cooked it?
Wow. That's dark.
Just throwing that out there. Maybe Aubrey didn't know what she was eating. She's like, this is delicious. And now Barclay can never...
I mean, this is the thing, though. Like, Aubrey was so attached to that damn rabbit in the mini-arc, that to have it not be mentioned at all seems very strange.
No, I agree.
It's the pin. It was the Max Fun Drive pin was the bunny.
But maybe the bunny got placed in timeout and it will come back in, like, season 6. And it'll hop back out.
And or it's already been given over to the keeper and it's going to be an NPC coming up soon. If it goes to Sylvain, it could become a bunny person.
That would be terrible.
Mad Hatter.
Do you think it's immediate or do you think it's through several generations?
Well, I think it's through several generations, but we have to start somewhere.
So I didn't understand it that way. I thought it was the creature itself transformed. Because if it's through several generations, that makes for some strange breeding practices.
Do you think...
Because you'd have to have, like, Noah's Ark style, like, a pair would have to get to Sylvain and then work its way down the chain.
But, I mean, that's how Griffin... I agree that is kind of fuzzy, the middle bits, but I thought that was how it happened, was that, you know, an animal crossed over, and through time... You know, the light of Sylvain, granted it, you know, increased, you know, knowledge and awareness and body and et cetera.
Yeah. Yeah, but I think we're talking about the same creature the whole time, not its offspring. Like, a rabbit hops through the gate and through 3 years hopping around Sylvain, it suddenly runs a hat shop.
I really like that. That was good.
Thank you. It's because I got confused with the hair from Alice in Wonderland and the Mad Hatter, and so I'm just making them one.
Or because you pull rabbits out of hats, like magicians. Like,
oh, that'd be better.
So here's a
question. I don't like your original joke. Then I like my interpretation of your joke. That was a better joke.
So that's I'm 0 for 2 then. I'm like a starter joke over here. I'm gonna make a thing and then just set you two up. I'm the fluffer of the comedy in our podcast.
Ooh. Ooh. Ooh.
Comedy and podcast both being in quotes, of course.
Here's a question. So a goat goes over there and becomes Vincent the Goat Man, right? And a squirrel goes over there and becomes what, like Squirrel Man or whatever he was?
The guard.
And Colin's about to say, then a bat goes over there and becomes Batman, right?
No. I'm wondering,
If a spider goes over there, spider, he becomes Spider-Man, right? Spider-Man.
If a man goes over there, does he become a main man?
So, my great-grandmother's name, like, family name, was Man-Man. That's what we called her.
Was she from Sylvain?
Maybe from Sylvain.
Yeah.
Wait, did you call her Man-Man?
Yeah.
Or her surname was Man-Man?
No, her surname was Man.
Uh-huh.
And so she got to become Man-Man.
What was her first name?
Anita.
Your great-great-grandmother's name was Anita Mann? That's awesome. She's a James Bond character. We should talk about the thing we're here to talk about more.
I'm just saying,
I don't know. Maybe people tune in for this.
I think it's interesting that in Sylvain, the pinnacle of evolution or the light of creation or whatever is to become human-esque, as opposed to perhaps some life form beyond man. It's the light of Sylvain has entered them and made them into an animal-human hybrid, as opposed to something beyond, you know, physical form or consciousness or whatever the case may be. I just thought it was interesting.
Yeah, I mean, you raise a fair point.
Oh, but it's the same way that any alien language can be somehow translated into English. Right? Like, we need something to grab onto. And the idea of something that is so other is really hard for us to process.
Especially as a radio show.
Well, I mean, in a radio show, I would think it might be easier to process. Because he can say whatever he wants, and then everybody just imagines whatever they'll imagine. But, I mean, I see your point. You need something to anchor the show to. I thought it was an interesting thing that the light of Sylvain hasn't pushed life to some higher form.
Well, and I think that gets at a lot of what we don't know about Sylvain. You know, we're still sort of treating it as the land where our fairy tales come from, but we don't know where or how it exists and what, you know, what forces of creation created it and how, you know, where, how it exists in relation to our plane or universe or whatever we're talking about. So maybe, you know, if it's running in parallel to our time universe.
Well, I did think it was interesting that they called our trio Earthlings.
Yeah.
Which is something to me that speaks of a different planet more than anything else.
Do you think there's a chance that Sylvain is just a different planet?
I mean, I think it's certainly possible if the gate serves as like a wormhole between the planets.
We're finally getting that Stargate reboot I've been writing it about for 10 years.
Maybe that's what he's trying to build this up to. Griffin's trying to get a TV show. Another TV show.
Another TV show.
Come on,
this
man.
This one with a bigger effects budget. Smaller. And it'll be very, very bad.
Hopefully smaller. There were a lot of good effects in that Mabim Bam show.
What about, what was it, the idea of this interpreter as sort of the ruler of Sylvain? And this sort of role in interpreting the laws and the happening.
Yeah, I thought it will be interesting to see how that plays out when they actually get to meet the interpreter.
Do you think it's Minerva?
No, I don't.
Oh, I don't think so. I don't know. Minerva still stands out as kind of a weird twist Griffin threw at us at the end of it, but I think she exists outside the Sylvan plane. I'm imagining that she is of, well, let's call her of Earth for the sake of being in our universe, but is not Sylvan. I think that's a different plot thread that Griffin's going to play at. And I am anticipating that thread becomes the major arc for this season versus the monster mini, you know, the monster camp, whatever we're going to call them, arcs.
Hunts.
Yeah, the monster hunts will be sort of our little snippets, and then the whatever is going on with Minerva, and then I think some probably machinations attempting to position Duck for something feel like the setup to a much broader story.
Yeah, and I mean,
can see that.
Yeah, I think that makes the most sense to me. It'll be something I feel like that encompasses both Sylvain and Earth. or whatever.
Yeah, they'll have to put these tensions aside and solve a common problem kind of thing.
Yeah, although I feel like that might be difficult with all the player characters being from one side.
That we know I of. I wonder. Because Aubrey's definitely half Sylvan. Or half of Sylvain.
That's true.
I'll be curious to see. This gets a little close to Zone of Postulation, but I'm hoping that they spend a more significant portion of the next episode in Sylvain, just because I feel like there's a lot of exposition that I actually want to get done now. That if they were to just get a taste of it, like go see the Enchanter and then see the Interpreter and then bounce and try to do another fight or something, like I don't imagine that being a really good episode. So I'm hoping they just kind of kick it in Sylvain for the next episode, and we get to tease out more about that structure.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and what the Enchanter can do in general. I mean, I don't know.
Well, and I
don't know. I have high hopes for a very, very goofy weapon that will defeat the water monster.
That's what I was going to ask, is what do you guys want the weapon to be? They said it'll be like some intangible weapon. And I'm really hoping, you know, I was a big fan of Escape from Monkey Island video games and their sort of tongue-in-cheek humor where, you know, you need a weapon and it's some goofy-ass thing that happens to work perfectly for the situation. I don't know what you guys think it will be or not.
Oh, definitely a big, big old silica pack.
Just dry it all up.
Mm-hmm.
I was hoping it'd be like a water bottle. Just trap it in there.
Well, and ooh, what about a super soaker? And then they could release it if they needed to?
Yeah, but super soakers I owned always leaked, so I don't trust that.
That's fair.
So this is...
I didn't have the greatest gaskets on those, on the screw fittings.
I think this is what bothered me the most with the episode, is I feel like this thing shouldn't be that hard to trap. But somehow,
just put it in a jar.
Every single thing that has water in it is connected in this town. Like, I'm sorry, it went down the vents of a hot spring.
Yeah, I think we're. I think we've once again ventured into that territory of Griffin came up with an idea before finishing researching what it is. Because I don't know why they'd be like. There's no vents in a hot spring.
So what I'm, the way I'm sort of putting it all together in my head is that Kepler's on top of an aquifer and they're pulling the water into the town from one side and the hot springs are a natural bit of the other. And then there's this giant body of water under Kepler that allows sort of the transport to different places. Yeah, it's not perfect, but...
Yeah, I mean, that's fine. You just... There's... You still don't have vents at hot springs. Like, because that... That would imply it being inside. Or... Then they're outside.
Being manufactured of some type.
No, I did not interpret that as... Vent as in man-made. As in vent as in just the place where the water is coming to the surface.
So I could, I think it sort of makes sense, but it's just, like, we've seen that this elemental being can move through liquid water. And Duck even had the assertion that, like, maybe it could deal with the humidity and air. But all we've seen is it move through liquid water. And so, you know, sort of, you know, if it is an aquifer underneath, I think that's plausible, but it would mean it could move through, like, not necessarily liquid water, but, you know, just wet material.
I was just assuming that it could move through, like, I mean, it could move through a small amount of water as it needed to. And so whatever small streams are coming through the rocks, you know, underneath Kepler is enough for it to travel.
It's this is the thing. This is the part that I think bothers me the most is that the way it moves seems so inexact, whereas that is something that I would think if you get it in the swimming pool and you can, I mean, I imagine...
Seal the pool?
Yeah, exactly. You seal the pool and it's stuck in the pool. And then you can siphon off water and now it's suddenly a manageable size. And so there are all these things that you could probably do to, you know, contain it that they cannot do because of, you know, a Deus Ex Machina type. Nope, it's gonna do this.
So, I think, yes, you're right. That does seem logical. In defense of the Adventure Zone, none of them have even mentioned attempting to do that, to that I recall. Like, they've talked about sort of separating it out and trying to take it in smaller chunks and sort of, like, steaming some of it off or whatever, but they haven't ever gotten down to the what if we were able to contain it and cut it off and then trying to enact that during a fight. And I don't know if that is them not actually thinking about it or them
sort well, of I mean, I
playing
guess...
characters who don't know what they're doing and getting overwhelmed.
And I mean, even... I mean, I think it still fits for the characters because they've only seen this thing twice. Once, they had a little bit of knowledge that it was there, but didn't know how to fight it, you know, in the pool. And then this most recent time, they were clearly acting under pressure to save people rather than fight the monster.
Yeah, and I'm all about it. I think it's great. I appreciate that the first time they fought the monster, they belly flopped on it and got lucky. And then the second time they fought the monster, Duck tried to stab it, and Ned tried to absorb it.
I love that he kept coming back to that, trying to make that plan seem like it was what he intended.
I was kind of upset that the water didn't absorb into the towels and then use it as like a whip. Now you've got the string of wet towels all tied together, imbued with water. That I thought it would have been a good opportunity for it to turn around and become a weapon. Also,
I did do a little digging based on this whole towel theory. So towels in the world are measured in terms of GSM, grams per square meter of water they can absorb. And generally, poor quality towels have a GSM between 200 and 300, whereas a superior towel would have something between 400 and 600. So it would be 600 grams per square meter would be the top end that a hotel towel could absorb.
So that's 600 milliliters a square meter.
Right. And we maybe think Ned had 8 towels. Each of them is... maybe 2 meters square. That seems fair. So 16 square meters, which would absorb 9 liters of water.
Good plan, Ned.
So, plan.
Well, how big are hot springs?
I didn't know any of these things.
I have no concept for how big hot springs are.
Okay. Bigger than 9 liters.
Average size hot springs.
Come on, man, we are just racking up questions for Neil deGrasse Tyson this episode.
Is this in his realm of specialty?
I assume that knowing science things more than us is honestly a lot of people's specialties. But
so this Wikipedia article I found about hot springs says they can produce between 800 and 1600 liters per second of water.
Okay, so he needed a few more towels.
So, what math do I need to do there?
Divide that by 9.
By 9?
And that will tell us how many towels it will take.
How many towels. A common unit of measurement of towels.
Okay, so by that math, he would need 935 towels.
935 or 935 8 towels?
I did the 8 already, so 935 towels total. So let's call it, it's 1,000 towel spring.
Well, now, wait a minute.
I'm now going to measure all my springs.
That was the hot spring production per minute, right?
Per second.
Per second. Okay. So this will accommodate 1 second of hot springs.
Yes, you need 1,000 towels per second to absorb the water being generated by a hot spring.
How big of a hot spring is this? 1,000 towels per second. That's a good unit of measurement.
So now we all know that, dear listeners.
Also, when they were fighting the water bubble containing Drake Coolice, actually shortly thereafter, after they saved Duck, Aubrey was dismayed that her fire powers didn't work, which, I mean, come on, Aubrey, it's water. But she said, like, if that doesn't work, I don't know what else I could do. And I was thinking back to the pool and like, hey, girl, you can make it a little chilly.
Okay, hold on. I gotta hold on. Last time on our episode, you were yelling at Aubrey for not attempting to turn it into steam.
Yeah,
and
agreed.
Now this time you're mad at Aubrey for doing it and not it not working and then not remembering that cold worked?
No.
You want her to do?
No. I want her to do exactly what she did. I just thought that she should remember that she can make it slightly chilly as well. That she has more than one
power. I feel like you have a pun you're trying to make there.
No.
So just say it.
No, I don't.
Okay.
Just wanted to say slightly chilly in a weird tone a couple times.
Right. Look, I'm just saying.
To nowhere.
What I'm trying to highlight here is how stupid it was to try and make the air a little chilly to slow down the water.
You say that it worked a lot better than fire did.
Yeah, but it shouldn't have.
Well, that's neither here nor there. It did.
Nonsense.
So what Griffin's allowing in his game is Griffin's problem, and ultimately, to an extent, our problem. But
yeah, well, exactly.
It definitely did happen.
I'm trying to address it.
All right.
I consider it addressed.
Yes, mailed, addressed, mailed, and delivered.
So, what did y'all think about the revelation of our cat friend at the end? And are there other fictional cats that should make an appearance in the Adventure Zone?
What is the what's the cat's name from Sabrina the Teenage Witch?
Salem?
Yes. So that was the only other cat I could think of at the time. But there's got to be other famous cats, right?
Garfield?
Yeah, the Cheshire one.
Although I guess they've done Garfield before.
They did.
Bagheera from The Jungle Book. That's a cat.
It's a big cat, but sure. Okay. Are we talking about one per season, though?
Do you think do you think that there's a bigger meta in play where all of the cats are connected?
I kind of feel like there's got to be something linking things together. You know, when Griffin started talking about the Light of Sylvain helping like develop this world, it sounded exactly like the Light of Creation from the Stolen Century, right? You know.
Yeah.
So I almost wonder if this is something akin to Brandon Sanderson's Cosmere.
Yeah.
You know, there are a bunch of very distinct worlds within it, but they're all connected by tiny threads that just show that they're in the same universe, even if they may never cross.
Yeah, this could be one of the worlds Trey Horny Boys saved during that last, from the hunger.
Hey, y'all remember how I said that in, like, the mini-arc, and you were like, no, that's dumb, Jake. I remember that.
I don't remember it, but it definitely sounds like something we did.
Yeah, that...
Because that's exactly how I'd react to you saying that.
That, it sounds on character, but I also don't recall.
But yeah, so we have a magic cat.
Do you think this is going to turn in? Is it going to serve the same role as Garfield? This is going to be the new Fantasy Costco. It's going to be the, I don't know, Sylvan Walmart or whatever.
I feel like no. And so I think this gets back to another concern that I had that was sort of addressed in this episode. Like, they did some lore digging. And, you know, they're doing this thing where they're searching out people and information. So sure. I could see Heathcliff returning because that's a fun joke.
Yeah.
I don't necessarily see him playing as frequent a role as Garfield did.
I mean, I don't know. We've been looking for what our lunar interlude is going to be for this segment, and I could see it being them hopping into Sylvain for a little while and like recharging a magical power or something, and you know, swinging by the enchanter and saying, you know, I have this magical pelt from a, you know, abomination that you turn it in for something, you know, as a sort of a mm-hmm. quest cycle for them.
So the
okay.
The thing that gives me hesitation with that is how they're seeking out Heathcliff now, by which I mean it is in the middle of an arc. They know what they're fighting, and they're going to him for a weapon to help them fight it. Whereas if he operates in that function, I think the arcs or the hunts would become a lot more formulaic of find out what's going on, go talk to Heathcliff, get what you need, and then come back and kill the monster, which I don't think would be particularly interesting.
Fair so, point. No, and with all of the, you know, setting that we got this time about, you know, Pine Guard members have been spread to the wind, you know, some have died, some have disappeared, and we definitely, like, I think the three of us all have considered the fact that there are similar groups in other places, because if the gate moves around, so too would there need to be people. So I think it's going to be much more driven by that seeking out of people and information gathering than here, make me a weapon that kills this monster.
Yeah, well, and I certainly hope that's the case. Because I don't think it would be particularly interesting if he provides weaponry. And so if they were to visit him in between these hunts, I think it makes sense. And could be in a more Garfield-type situation. But as they're using him... I do think
the trick of that would be, though, that this game system seems a lot less item-focused than D&D was. So I don't know if there's enough of a benefit in that, you know, gachapon kind of character or mechanic to give them new stuff to let them do cool things. I think it's going to be more in skill development that really comes through.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're right. Although, truth be told, I kind of miss all the fun shit they got in D&D.
Well, we're only 3 episodes in. There's still time for some dumb weapons to show up.
Fantasy Costco, where all your dreams come true.
I also miss all the dice rolling.
Yeah.
Colin and I were talking about that offline, where even if they use Roll20 for their numbers, can they just roll a dice to make the sound, please?
Yeah, it's not that hard to make a dice sound effect.
Yeah.
It is sort of weird to not have that that auditory trigger of, and now I roll, and then you do it, and then you get a result of just knowing.
It's, yeah.
It feels strangely disconnected in a way I wouldn't have anticipated feeling, but I definitely notice it as well.
Yeah, oh, I got a 9. Feels weird.
Well, what's tough, too, is it's ultimately they are being more truthful and accountable to each other by using Roll20.
Oh, absolutely.
But we don't get to know that.
Yeah, like, I think it's the right choice for the game. You know?
But, I mean, I don't know.
I'd rather them... Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think I disagree, because I think, you know, especially when they're talking about making choices to be narratively interesting, and they've kind of already said that... Or they've set the precedent that they will let some things go in the interest of it being narratively interesting. I think hearing the dice roll and then they will tell you how they did is kind of part of it. To make it both sonically and narratively interesting for us as listeners to partake in.
Yeah, I do wonder if the Powered by the Apocalypse system makes that a little bit trickier, just because you're not... the margin is so much smaller. If you're only going up to 12, you know, then with modifiers, that choosing, you know, if you rolled an 8 and then choosing a 10 is a much larger gap than it would be in a D&D roll on a D20.
Yeah, I mean, you're totally right.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if that matters. I think there's a case to be said that they all have a good enough grasp of what they're doing and what they should be rolling, that if it's an appropriate moment for them to fail, they'll let a failure happen, or if they roll, you know, sort of a middling roll, they'll error lower or higher based on what fits the story. But I wonder, there's a part of me that wonders if it doesn't, if it isn't a setup, the sort of cynical part of me, if it isn't set up so that Griffin has sole control over that. Because if he's the one doing sort of soft moves with NPCs, that he is the one who can fudge it to make it work, as opposed to them trying to, as a group, make choices for a narrative.
And, yeah, you know, and that's sort of what I was saying, that it ends up with a lot of Griffin saying, so here's what I think happens.
Yeah.
Which I don't know how I feel about that.
Yeah, that specific phrase does come up a lot. I'm like, here's how I think that works. And I get it. I get that we have to have it explained in narrative. And I think for the most part, the things that Griffin describes are more evocative and, you know, fitting of a story they're telling than what the other McElroys might narrate for themselves. But it does seem to remove a lot of that agency that we keep harping on. And I feel like in the last couple of things, you know, I think they have all started to stand their ground a little bit more against Griffin doing those things. You know, I'm struggling to remember the exact moment, but I recall having a feeling of, you know, Justin was distinctly pushing back against Griffin, trying to rewrite the narrative, saying like, no, this is what I'm doing. Like, it's not that.
Yeah. And I think Justin's definitely the one to do it.
Yeah.
More than anybody else.
Yeah, I think Clint will probably easily play sort of the dumb card that he the role that he moves himself into, and then Travis will just exist in between the space, whereas Justin might be able to stand up and say like, no, this is what Duck is doing, this is how this plays out, not really accepting a reframe of the actions I'm taking.
Yeah. I think he serves to do that a fair bit.
Yeah. But we've hit the two major beats of this episode, which then brings us to, we really need to start thinking about what's going to happen next. We're setting up a lot of story, and I think we need to get down to the zone of postulation.
Zone of postulation.
I don't know. I think they're going to kick it, like I said earlier, they're going to kick it in Sylvain for the entirety of the next episode. I think we're going to be in a more exposition heavy episode next time. And I'm going to guess that they don't end up getting the weapon they need as easily as they'd like. There's going to be some little side quest kind of situation they have to do in order to get something out of the enchanter. And then I'll also venture a guess that there's going to be some complications with the interpreter, and they're going to get in some legal trouble on the Sylvain side.
Nice.
I can dig it.
Nice. Yeah. I could see all of that happening.
I have a really bold prediction. Bring it up. And stop me if you think you've heard this one before, but I postulate that Mom is going to come back. And at the end of the episode, she's going to drop a truth bomb on us, and that's what's going to happen. And one of these days, I'm going to be right.
Do you want me to just record that for you, and that way you can just say, like, I postulate, and then I'll just play it back every time from the first time you said it?
From the we do that soundboard?
Yeah, right. A new app coming to your phone? Never. But Jake just keeps postulating that Mom is coming home.
So, I mean, Chris and I are just taking fundamentally different strategies to our postulating, right? Is because, like, you can go for breadth to get to 100, or you can go so hyper-specific that it calls out a moment. And right. Well, we've both been wrong up till now, so.
You're barking up the right tree, because if over the course of this arc, Mama doesn't come back, I am very concerned about the narrative storytelling skills that Griffin possesses. Like, that's just a huge loose end to make us not know about.
Yeah.
Now, if the rabbit doesn't come back, I'll deal with that.
Maybe Mama took the rabbit. Anyway, I think that they will talk to the enchanter. They'll get the weapon they need, whatever that may be, maybe a giant stack of towels. A thousand towels strong. But the enchanter, as they will leaving, will say something vague and uncertain about Aubrey and her magical prowess. And then they will meet briefly with the interpreter, leave Sylvain, and then get beat up by the monster a third time, which will find them in some unconnected body of water that somehow it's gotten into.
Just real quick, I know a lot of people will be wondering, the ShamWow had a GSM of 400, so it's not that good.
Yeah, I felt like that was mainly for pushing water around. Anyway, thanks for listening to We Do That. Come back in a couple weeks when we'll be discussing, I think, the break show that they're taking.
In the meantime, you can find us on Twitter at WeDoThat_pod. And tweet at us using the AtazFanCast hashtag. Or you can email us at wedothatpod@gmail.com. Send us your reactions, thoughts, and theories.
So that we can shamelessly steal them. And please send them in because, look, Jake only has one theory. Here.
Special thanks to The Early for our intro and outro music.
New episodes of We Do That come out Thursdays after the Adventure Zone. Y'all, we talked about it, and I think we're going to try to fill that hole in your lives. That is Wrong Thursday. So now Wrong Thursday is We Do That Thursday.
Or We Do Thursday.
Which is not as good as We Do That Wednesday, but it makes more sense for it to be on Thursday.
Just We Do Thursday.
We do
because we already have a T.
We Do That Thursday. We Do
Thursday. We Do Thursday.
We Do That Thursdays.
No, We Do Thursday.
Thursdays, We Do That.
We're gonna try that out for a couple weeks and see how it feels. Let us know what you think, and we'll go from there.
And if you enjoy listening to We Do That, please rate us and review us on iTunes or wherever you get your podcast, and share this with all of your friends and family. They will thank you for it.
We'll be back in 2 weeks with the live episode that they put up, and then 4 weeks from now we'll be back in Amnesty. Bye, everybody.